This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
It's 1986 and it's finally the big day, your birthday. And there's one specific gift that always makes an appearance at your birthday and even Christmas. A brand new blank VHS tape. The family home video collection is a mix of everyone's favorite stuff combined onto various blank tapes. But this one, this is just for you. And you can record whatever you want on it. Sitcoms, movies of the week, music videos, it's all yours. You rip off the plastic and stick on the front and side labels so you can write down what you've recorded onto it, ready to create the ultimate video mixtape. The VCR and your tapes are the cornerstones of home entertainment, but little do you know that it almost all went away forever. I'm Jamie Logie, and this is Everything 80s, a podcast that looks back on a decade that forever changed the way we dress, consume, and connect it. And today, it's a look back on how, if things had gone differently, home video as you know it may have never happened. This is a story of how the VCR was almost made illegal. When the VCR first arrived on the scene, it was astonishing technology. We think nothing of it today, but the ability to record what was happening on your TV and play it back later was pretty revolutionary. For decades, TV was a one-shot deal, and if you missed something, you missed it. Your only hope was a rerun at a later date. The video cassette recorder, or VCR, changed all of that. And the VCR goes back further than you may realize. The concept began in 1956, when the Ampex Corporation introduced the VRX-1000, the first practical video recorder for television. This $50,000 machine was intended for stations and networks. But the groundwork for home video had been laid. Fast forward to 1964, when work began on a home video recorder. The Sony Corporation put together a team that created the CV2000, the world's first VCR intended for home use. As shared on Sony's official website, the machine, which could only record black and white images, was quickly adopted for medical and industrial purposes. That machine then found its way into schools. But its use in homes was still a little ways off. Sony knew that the smaller the machine was, the better. This led to the Sony U-Matic from the late 60s. It was good, but not exactly what Masaru Ibuka, the co-founder of Sony, was looking for. The machine needed to be smaller, and it was imperative to hit the consumer market to get it into homes. This machine not only needed to be smaller, but the tapes did too. The cassette tapes needed to look like something a family would keep on a bookshelf. Ibuka wanted the cassette tape, quote, the size of the Sony business diary, identical to a Japanese paperback size, unquote. It's now 1973 and a new prototype has been created. It's smaller than the U-Matic and used a tape the size of the Sony diary. In Japan, color TV had begun to take over black and white. And the next question was, what would come after the color TV? For Sony, it would be their new video cassette recorder. Their new machine was being referred to by a Japanese word that describes the way signals are recorded onto tape. That word was beta. Another interesting connection was the path that the tape followed in the cassette closely resembled the Greek letter or beta. This was it, though, the machine that would create a home video revolution. Not only could it record TV, but you could set it to record a show when you weren't even home. On April 16, 1975, Sony announced the SL6300 VCR deck, now called Betamax. But while that was going on, JVC was working on a video cassette recorder of its own. But this was one with a different format than Beta. It was called the Video Home System, or VHS.
Ask your dealer to let you compare the JVC VHS with other systems. You'll JVC the difference.
In September 1976, JVC announced the VHS to the world, thus kicking off a format war that would stretch well into the 1980s. Beta promoted better quality, while VHS gave you more recording time. And each played up its superiority over the other.
But when the smoke clears, we think you'll find one that does just about what everybody else's does, and does things nobody else's does. It's the Betamax.
These machines seem like something from the future. But for the average person, there was a big problem. These machines were not cheap. As the 1980s began, a VCR was still over $1,000. Flipping through the pages of the 1981 Ward's Christmas catalog, on page 364, there are three options. One VCR for $989, one for $1,189, and a high-end, two-week, eight-program programmable one with wireless remote control for $1,389.88. Adjust these prices for inflation, and in today's money, that's around $3,400, $4,000, and for that top-of-the-line model, $4,700. That high-end one weighed around 41 pounds, but did come with one 60-minute blank tape. But for nearly $5,000, I would hope so. The interesting thing here is the three machines that are advertised are advertised as a VCR, not Betamax or VHS. They are in fact top-loading Betamaxes, but the average consumer wasn't yet necessarily sure of the differences between VHS and Beta. They were just getting familiar with the VCR in general. These costs in 1981 were still extreme, but they had come down a bit since the VCRs were first released. But if your family was like mine, a VCR still costs more than our car. This would all change, as, like all technology, prices eventually drop, and the VCR started to find its way into more and more homes. Because it was amazing. We could record anything we wanted off our TVs, sports, TV shows, or movies. And the VCR quickly became a cornerstone of our entertainment in the 1980s. But that almost didn't happen. And that's where our story picks up. As the American public was discovering the wonders of the VCR, Universal Studios saw a problem. They wanted to outlaw home recording and, ostensibly, outlaw the VCR. As shared in a 2012 Atlantic article, recording a program in your home could be seen as obtaining copyrighted material. There was now a combination of old laws and new technology. How would all of this work? Did recording a movie off of TV mean you were in violation of possessing copyrighted content? The studio's issue with the public owning copyrighted content was about it being turned for profit. But this wasn't the intent of home recording. You tape your favorite shows and movies so you could watch them at your own convenience. The average person wasn't bootlegging copies of the movie Cry, Cry Again. It was that complicated merger of old laws and new technology, and home recording didn't seem to fit the definition of possessing copyrighted works. It wasn't just Universal, but Walt Disney Productions too. And they had already tried to stop the spread of the VCR and home recording from the get-go. As shared in a 2018 Mental Floss article, the studios had already filed a lawsuit way back in 1976 to completely halt the sales of the Betamax. They were worried that, quote, film and TV producers would lose millions of dollars from unauthorized duplication and distribution of their copyrighted content, unquote. When a movie aired on television, the studios got a cut of it. The airing of a movie was a one-time event, but the arrival of the VCR turned everything on its head, or VCR heads, as it were. It took 3 years for that case to go to trial, but in 1979, the U.S. District Court ruled in favor of Sony. They stated that, quote, there was no proof that the practice did any economic harm to the television or motion picture industry, unquote. Universal wasn't happy with the verdict. They had been worried about the VCR since it first launched. They saw the future of home video and worried about the damage it may do. According to a 2006 University of Michigan Law School report, back in the 70s, Universal's lawyers had even sent a private investigator to consumer electronics stores posing as customers to catch sales clerks making recordings of Universal programs. One witness testified that when Gone with the Wind was broadcast, stores across the U.S. sold out of blank video cassettes. The University of Michigan report also states that the chairman of Walt Disney testified that the company had, quote, declined lucrative contracts to broadcast Mary Poppins and the Jungle Book on television because they feared that consumers might tape the movies, unquote. In February 1981, Universal appealed the decision, and in the fall of 1981, the ruling was reversed. On October 19, 1981, the Washington Post shared the decision in an article with a big, bold headline that read, "Videotaping at home ruled illegal." The article shares, right at the start, that the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals says that the nearly 3 million Americans who own home videotape recorders are breaking the law when they record copyrighted movies and programs on television. Things kicked off quickly. The day after that, members of Congress introduced legislation in both the House and the Senate to legalize home video recording. Many people who had just bought a VCR were unaware of what was happening in Congress regarding their expensive new machines. They were just interested in being able to tape episodes of Three's Company. While this is all going on, there is now also a war between VHS and Beta, with VHS quickly taking the reins as the dominant format. The VCR as a whole is growing quickly. By 1983 and into 84, one out of every seven homes owned one. By 1984, prices were about to drop to around $500. And according to a November 1984 New York Times article, VCR sales to dealers through the first 9 months of 1984 were about to jump 81% more than the same period the year prior, with now over 8 million people owning one. The VCR is quickly moving from novelty to necessity, but the legal issues carry on. Sony was seen as, quote, liable as contributory infringers, as were its U.S. subsidiary, its advertising agency, and the retail store defendants. What eventually became known as the Betamax case was about to go all the way to the Supreme Court. And now, someone is about to step in to help save the day for the VCR. One of the very last people you would ever expect.
Everything 80s will return after these messages.
By the spring of 1982, more than 3 million people had bought a VCR. Not only that, but video rental stores were starting to pop up everywhere. We're still a few years away from Blockbuster and the giant video barns we would come to know, but home rental was quickly becoming a viable business, another thing the studios weren't happy with. But it was Sony that was still facing the uphill battle. On June 14, 1982, the Supreme Court agreed to hear the Sony case. By the time the day of the oral arguments came around in October 1983, some 5 million people now owned a VCR. And the Universal Studios versus Sony Corporation of America case arrives at the Supreme Court. The Betamax case, as it became known, goes on for an entire year. And clearly, this is the time when the VCR is growing like wildfire. What was going to happen if Sony lost? Would you have to give your VCR back? Did a knock at the door mean you would have to quickly cover your VCR up with a blanket the same way Marty and Doc did with the DeLorean when Lorraine showed up at Doc's house? Would you get charged for taping episodes of Magnum PI? The head of the Motion Picture Association of America, Jack Valenti, argued about the savages and ravages of the VCR. In the 60 pages of testimony still available online through the Electronic Frontier Foundation, Valenti compares the VCR to the Boston Strangler for what it was doing to the American film producer. He also brings up the issue for advertisers, as with a video recording, we could now fast forward through commercials. This was another of the major worries when the VCR first hit the market, as the use of what they called the pause switch then could eliminate commercials while recording, and the fast forward switch allowed you to zoom through the commercials during playback. Remember having your trigger finger ready to hit that pause button perfectly to start recording again when your show came back on? The issue of video rental also comes up because new movie releases were very expensive to own back then, a move made by the studios to recoup some of the losses from theatrical re-releases. Since a brand new movie was so expensive, they weren't in many homes at first. The media stat analysis presented in the case said 67% of VCR owners own no pre-recorded cassettes. Owners did eventually plan to buy one, but at that point, the majority of videotapes in the home were from home recordings, and movies were the single most recorded program type. Valenti also drops a bomb, sharing that the number of movies recorded in a year by 2.4 million VCR households could equal over 6.5 million movies. And at a pre-recorded purchase price of $50, the retail value would be $3.2 billion. He follows this with, quote, "Mr. Chairman, things like that could make a grown man cry," unquote. The prediction by the studios was that things were only going to get worse. By the end of the 80s, they projected that 30 to 35 million households would own a VCR, with VCR owners buying up to 300 million blank tapes. The other worry, besides the copyright one, was the money the VCR could cost the studios was going to lead to the decline of quality programs and television. It was a tough task for Sony to combat the major studios, but they had a secret weapon. there was one very famous person in favor of the VCR. A person who seemed very unlikely to get involved with the Supreme Court over this issue. But this was someone we all grew up with.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
Mr. Rogers himself came in to testify on behalf of the VCR. He liked the new technology because the VCR allowed people to tape Mr. Rogers' neighborhood and have their kids watch it when it was convenient for the family. The VCR allowed a household to program their own watch time when it made sense for them and not be restricted to a network time slot. The VCR gave us more control over our lives and led to less programming. Fred Rogers was opposed to people being programmed by others, and he went on to state that, quote, "My whole approach in broadcasting has always been, you are an important person just the way you are. You can make healthy decisions. I just feel that anything that allows a person to be more active in the control of his or her life in a healthy way is important," unquote. The VCR let us make the schedule. We could watch what we wanted, when we wanted, instead of having to schedule and plan our whole day around when the networks aired our favorite shows. Instead of having to race home or drop everything to watch your show, lest you completely miss it, the VCR gave us a bit more of a breather. It let us relax, knowing we wouldn't miss anything. The VCR, especially for families with young kids, took away some of the stress in our lives. It may seem silly to think about missing a TV show as stress, but if you grew up in the 80s without a VCR, you know how true this was. Entire days needed to be scheduled around not missing a big moment or show on TV. A little bit of stress is still stress. And Fred Rogers praised the VCR as something that improved our lives. The VCR, he argued, was a service to families. The testimony of Mr. Rogers played a major role in this gigantic case. And when the decision finally arrived in January 1984, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of Sony. Consumers did not violate the law when they recorded something off TV. For people who may have not been aware of this case, the decision was shared widely through the press. The public didn't realize how close they came to beta and VHS tapes being illegal in a completely different world of home entertainment. It needs to be pointed out that the decision by the Supreme Court in the Betamax case was not a unanimous one. Far from it. The Supreme Court decision was 5-4 in favor of Sony. According to Bruce Boyden from Marquette University Law School, it split the 13 judges to consider it 7-6 the other way. That is how close we got to an astonishing change in how we consume media. If it had gone the other way, recording a program to watch at another time would not be considered fair use, and VCR manufacturers would, quote, have to get a license from any content owners whose programs might be recorded, unquote. Boyden calls the Betamax case the most important Supreme Court case in copyright law. It's hard to picture what a world like this would have looked like. Would the cost of VCRs, if they even remained, have gone through the roof to account for the licensing? How would royalties be paid to the studios? Would videotapes, if even ever available again, have a limited recording time? Would VCRs even have a record button on them? Would we have never seen a VCR again, and with that, no DVD, Blu-ray, then possibly Netflix, and then streaming? It's impossible to tell how this would have all played out, but thanks in big part to a beloved children's entertainer, Sony One. Tom Shales, the Pulitzer Prize-winning television critic from the Washington Post, described the victory as, quote, one small step for man, one giant kick in Big Brother's pants, unquote. He said that there won't be dancing in the streets, but taping in the living rooms. If Sony had lost, the cost of VCRs, if they were still around, would have definitely gone up. But now, they were really going down. By the time the Supreme Court decision was made, VCR sales had gone up by 10 million machines. By 1985, the VCR was now called the appliance of the 80s. The Chicago Tribune reported that the VCR is, quote, becoming a household appliance as common as a toaster. By the mid-80s, you could get a VCR for now under $300. A Sanyo 7-day programmable VCR with a wireless remote went for as low as $268. Adjusted for inflation, and that's over $700, but a gigantic difference from the $4,000 plus equivalent of VCRs just 4 years prior. The decision also led to the rapid explosion of the home video market, which didn't have to worry about the copyright restrictions. By 1985, as reported in the Chicago Tribune, Americans rented 700 million videotapes. And this was only the beginning, because in October 1985, a new video rental store opened in Dallas, Texas, Blockbuster Video. The Betamax case was a landmark case. It feels funny to say, but in January 1984, the VCR became fully legal. The studios, who didn't agree with the Supreme Court's decision, ended up thriving financially thanks to the boom in home rental and video sales. But the 80s, as far as we know it for how we consume content in our homes, was here to stay. And it's interesting how the machine at the center of all of this, the Betamax, would eventually fade away as the VHS won the VCR format war. Beta is the one that gets knocked for not being able to survive, but it was that machine, created by Sony, that did more for us than you may have ever realized. So that's our show. Thank you so much for listening. If you want some more on the incredible home video revolution of the 80s, I have some previous shows about the battle between VHS and Beta, an episode on the rapid growth of video rental stores, and a special episode where I take a trip to Jumbo Video, one of the last remaining video rental stores that continues to be in operation. But besides those, I have a ton of other previous episodes waiting for you to listen to them. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the Everything 80s podcast wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss out on new episodes. We've talked a lot about movies today, and if you're interested in 1980s movies, you can check out the Everything 80s Movie Review podcast over at patreon.com. That's where I review the good, the bad, and the ugly of 1980s movies, including ones like The Princess Bride, Masters of the Universe, Big, and Weekend at Bernie's, just to name a few. If you want to check that out or learn more, you can just head on over to patreon.com/80s. That's patreon.com/80s, or click on the link in the description. So thank you again so much for being with me here today. I know there are millions of podcasts out there, so I can't tell you how much it means that you've chosen to listen to mine. So I'm Jamie. This has been Everything 80s, but I'll be back soon with a new episode. Don't you dare miss it.
Hi. Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.